Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is brought to you by High Echelon. High Echelon PC is a nationwide CPA firm based in Atlanta focused on a great client experience. High Echelon provides top quality work with total transparency so clients always know exactly what they're getting. They believe accounting doesn't need to be complicated and that clients should get the experience they deserve, which includes top-notch accounting, tax, and payroll services, timely communication, complete data flow, and the best automation security. Book a call or drop them a line on their website, highecheloncpa.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Blue Pineapple Travel. Blue Pineapple Travel is an agency of experienced travel advisors who help you design the perfect trip. Blue Pineapple Travel advisors are all well-traveled and knowledgeable, and they will be your advocates from start to finish. They love to help people plan their travel, whether it's for a race, a family trip, a weekend getaway, or the trip of a lifetime. Their goal is to match you with the trip that you want. Relaxation or adventure, traveling solo or with a group, inside the U.S. or abroad, Blue Pineapple Travel can plan exactly the trip that you want. Find them online at BluePineappleTravel.com and see some of the great places that folks who have worked with Blue Pineapple Travel go on their Instagram, at Blue Pineapple Travel. MPE Coaching is the coaching arm of the podcast. If you like what you hear here and you need help preparing for a big goal, reach out to us at PleasantPodcast@gmail.com or MPEcoach@gmail.com. Trail races, marathons, triathlons, multi-day relays, we have helped people get ready for all of these things. Our approach is rooted in proven exercise physiology, but we also bring our own experience as coaches and athletes to bear. We specialize in helping adults with busy schedules find ways to build fitness and accomplish their goals. Whether you're looking to complete your first multi-sport race, qualify for Boston or Kona, set a new marathon PR, or simply become a healthier, happier athlete, we can help. Click on the coaching link on the podcast website, www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Elemental Altitude Training Center. Elemental Altitude is Atlanta's only altitude training facility. At Elemental Altitude state-of-the-art indoor training center, they are capable of simulating elevation of up to 24,000 feet. Training in the thinner air and lack of oxygen prompts an increase in red blood cells, meaning that more oxygen can be delivered to your working muscles on race day. Athletes undertaking all sorts of goals, from rugged mountain climbs to flat sea level marathons to Ironman triathlons, train in the hypoxic environment created at Elemental Altitude. I trained there several times ahead of my successful race at the London Marathon in 2022. And Michelle trained there extensively for the Silver Rush 50 in 2023, her first ever 50-mile race that spent a lot of time over 10,000 feet. In addition, Elemental Altitude hosts a variety of physiological testing, such as sweat testing, blood lactate testing, VO2 max testing, and a variety of metabolic testing, which can tell you your resting metabolic rate and the types and amounts of fuels you are burning at different training and racing intensities. Drop them a line at info@elementalaltitude.com if you have questions or to set up an appointment. Their website is elementalaltitude.com. And finally, our new sponsor for 2024 is Bright Hair. Bright Hair is a creative design studio offering branding, graphic design, marketing, and website design and support. They designed our Most Pleasant Exhaustion logo, and they are helping to build our website right now. The folks at Bright Hair are patient and thorough, and they listen to your feedback. Their expertise has been critical to our getting our branded merchandise shop off the ground in early 2024. Be sure to reach out to them with any graphic design or marketing needs that you have. You can find them at brighthair.com. That's bright, B-R-I-G-H-T, hair, H-A-R-E.com, or on Instagram at bright.hair. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast possible. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast, brought to you by MPE Coaching, High Echelon PC, Elemental Altitude Training Center, Blue Pineapple Travel, and Bright Hair. My name is George Darden. I'm an endurance athlete and coach in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a father of twin boys, and I'm a college professor.
My name is Michelle Frank. I'm also an endurance athlete in Atlanta, Georgia. I am a mom to three girls and a CPA.
And my name is Eric Hall. I'm an endurance athlete and coach in Raleigh, North Carolina. the father to three baby adults and the husband to a beautiful wife, Melissa.
Awesome. Very good. I'm excited that we're here today because we have some fun stuff to talk about. Michelle, where are you right now? Because you're not currently in Atlanta, Georgia.
No, the background looks a little different, you say?
It does.
I'm in Virginia Beach and just burning time and nervous energy before I try this road marathon thing again on Sunday morning. So
awesome. Awesome.
This is,
can't wait.
Yeah, I had hoped to run Houston and got COVID and couldn't really bounce right back. So this is about 8 weeks later. Got the stomach bug last week, but I really feel fine. So I'm hoping to just kind of forget that happened and have a go at it tomorrow. So
awesome. Very good. And your nails, which I currently see, are on point.
Yeah, my nails are awesome. I brought the top that I'm wearing tomorrow to the nail salon. And I had like three women help me find the color nail that like matched it the best. It was a whole scene. I'm sure nobody can believe I made a scene in a nail salon. Typically, if I go in there, I don't ever get nail polish. And the owner once told me that I'm the type of person where if there was a express service where you could just drop your hands and go and then come back and pick them up, that I'm the type of person that would use that.
I could see that.
So it's kind of a big deal when I want nail polish and then when I need it to match perfectly. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm ready.
And then one of the nails has a shamrock since you're running the Shamrock Marathon.
Well, we are
right?
giving away all the secrets, aren't we? Yeah. So I Google image searched, you know, St. Patrick's Day nails and showed them exactly what I wanted, which is this whole thing, right? They get another person, they paint one nail white, and then they paint it a shamrock. They painted a four-leaf clover, which is fine if you're not type A like me and you wanted a shamrock, which has got like three leaves. But ironically, the more that I looked into it, the shamrock that is the race logo is actually four leaves. So it's debatable now whether, you know, my nail is good to go.
I feel like it's good to go. Yeah. I feel like it's good to go. I'm on board with you painting your nails. 12 weeks out from Comrades, I'm beginning to think in practical, bona fide terms about what it is I'm going to be putting on my body, in terms of temporary tattoos and that sort of thing, which I,
yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's super fun. And I tend to do that particularly for A races, but I used to do a lot more when I did Ironmans because that's like an all day thing, right? And because the intensity is lower, like you can look at your nails or you can look at your temporary tattoos and derive some energy from those. Whereas I don't always feel like I have the opportunity to do that in marathons. But you know, Comrades, I'll definitely have the opportunity to do that. So I'm on,
yeah.
I'm excited you got your
feet. I would like to point out that you just used the term practical while Michelle was talking about a not really shamrock on her finger for the shamrock run and you putting temporary tattoos on your body for Comrades.
Just so we're clear.
That's why I'm here. To bring us back down to earth every once in a while.
It's a different use of the word practical.
No, but Eric, seriously, few people have been invested in my nail choice color selection than as George. Like he is loving this.
Absolutely. No, every student who is in my class knows how much I appreciate nail polish, and how much I wish that it was more the norm in the American South that men wore nail polish. But it is not. I one time painted my nails in probably 2004 for a Halloween costume. And like walked around all weekend with my nails painted and like just holding my hands out in front of me, just admiring my nails for the entire weekend. But then of course I stopped by the Walgreens on the way to school on Monday morning and took all the nail polish off. And it's not that I'm ashamed of having painted nails or anything else like that, but it's just not a conversation I want to have with somebody who derives some conclusion about me based upon the fact that I paint my nails. So not I, but you, and I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you.
I learn something new about you every podcast.
That's
I have
good
known
to hear
you for
it.
Over 30 years, and this has never come to light.
And
this
you've never known how into nail polish I am. Yeah.
No, I'm thinking Blue Ridge Relay might be a little bit more interesting this year. You in
Maybe.
Western North Carolina with your nails painted. Is that
Maybe.
A conversation you want to have?
So probably not. No, I am going to be doing a little Western North Carolina running in about 3 weeks. So Comrades Marathon training for me at this point right now is totally on. I have 2 2-hour runs this weekend back to back, which is the biggest back to back stack I've ever done. I did the first one this morning. I actually rode my bike for 40 minutes before I went out and ran up and down the mountain next to my house 3 times, Kennesaw Mountain. And then I'll go out and do just a regular 2-hour run tomorrow. I'm nervous about it, but I'm actually feeling pretty good. So yeah.
What are we doing in 2 weeks in Western North Carolina?
Okay, yeah. So
you've
got my full
attention.
Okay, very good. So 1 week from now, I'm actually running a 50K race. That'll be fairly low key in Chickamauga, Georgia. And then 3 weeks from now, on Friday, I'm going to go and run along the Mountains to Sea Trail.
Okay.
I'm going to run what's technically the first 25 to 30 miles of the Mountains to Sea Trail, but I'm going to be running it backwards. And so I'm going to run from about like the 28 mile mark back to Klingman's Knob, which is the starting point, which is right there on the Appalachian Trail, on the line between North Carolina and Tennessee. And then the next day, Saturday, I'm driving down to Charlotte on Friday afternoon. And on Saturday, I'm going to run a trail marathon in Charlotte, an organized race. I'm looking forward to both of those. So yeah, these big
four
weekend
to five
stacks.
Hours of driving.
So yeah, but it's going to be awesome.
After a 20. Why? I don't get it.
You're talking about to go from Klingman's Knob to Charlotte.
Yeah.
It's not 4.5 hours. It's about 2.5 hours. I actually mapped it out before I made the plan. So yeah, it is going to be a little bit of a drive, but I'm a road trip guy. I do like it. I think it's going to be super fun. My coach has been, very much encouraging me to use the opportunity of having to do a lot of long weekend runs to explore new places and new trails and stuff like that, particularly ones that have a lot of elevation gain. And so that's what I'm going to be doing in a couple of weeks. So it should be a lot of fun. I'm excited about that. And then 3 weeks after that, we have the Tobacco Road Relay with one Lee Ragsdale and one Eric Hall, which I'm excited about as well. So yeah.
So
training
just
is
one
in full gear here.
One clarification correction. It's a Klingman's Dome.
Klingman's Dome. Thank you. I knew
also
it wasn't Klingman's Knob.
Also, you're going to be in Tennessee, aren't you?
So it's right on the line between Tennessee.
It's right on the border.
Mm-hmm.
So where will you park?
Klingman's Dome. So Klingman's Dome,
okay.
They have a
and
parking lot there that has 167 spaces.
Yeah, it's huge.
And then I'm going to get a shuttle to actually take me to about the 28 mile mark,
okay.
Which is right on the intersection of the Mountains to Sea Trail with Highway 441.
Yeah, I know.
I ran this morning with the husband of friend of the podcast, Jacqueline Nasser. I ran with Chris Nasser, and he actually is going to be driving up to someplace to be timing a race in the Mid-Atlantic, and he actually might join me for part of it. So I'm excited about that as well. I'm enjoying my training right now. It's a lot, but I'm finding lots of ways to make it fun and engaging and exciting.
Are you gonna take any new piece of hydration gear potentially on this run with you?
Funny you should ask, Michelle. I actually bought a new piece of hydration gear just yesterday.
What? Are you for real? I had no idea.
Beware the Ides of March. George buys hydration gear. Now, I've actually never worn a hydration vest. But when I did a run a week and a half ago at Amicalola Falls, that finished at Springer Mountain, which is the southern terminus of the Appalachian Trail, I didn't really have enough water. And I didn't have enough fuel in general. And because of that, the last hour or so of the run kind of sucked, even though I enjoyed being out there. And so I purchased the Salomon Advanced 5. Is that what it's called? The one that you told
Advanced
me to get.
Skin, yeah.
Advanced Skin 5. Yes, the one that you told me to get. And so I'm going to use it tomorrow. I'm going to just wear it for a regular old 2-hour run to see how it goes. And then presuming that it goes well, I will certainly use it on that run at Klingman's Dome in 3 weeks. So yeah, I'm excited about it. Thank you for the advice, and I certainly hope that it works well. I imagine that it will, because I trust your judgment.
George, that is a substantial run that you are going to do.
I'm saying the day, I mean, it's about 6,000 feet. Yep. It's about 28 miles and it's about 6,000 feet of vertical, and it finishes at the top, right?
Right. At the top of Klingmans.
Right. Right.
So you're going to, and you basically have two long climbs, mm-hmm. kind of one little right. punch at the end to get to the top of Klingmans. So exactly. It's two long ones and then that little punch at the end.
Right.
That's substantial, right. George.
That's about the same amount of vertical that is in the Comrades Marathon itself. So it's about 6,000 feet over the course of that run. That's about how much there is inside of Comrades, and then come back the next day, like I said, yeah.
And double the mileage.
Yeah. And then come back the next day and do that trail marathon in Charlotte. So I'm excited about it. I think it's gonna be fun. Eric, you are welcome to join me for any or all of that run.
I will join you. You know what, George, I can promise you that I will join you for none of that run.
As soon as you said, I can promise you, I was like, where's this going to go? Wait, am I going to get Eric out? And nope.
What day is that? You said 3 weeks. So that's the Friday. 6th and the 7th fifth, when you're doing
fifth,
this?
The 5th and the 6th.
The 5th and the 6th. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And so I look forward to telling you all about it once I do that.
George, does the 50K next week use any of the same lookout stuff that we ran when we did that other race?
I think that it does.
Like, it looks like it overlapped a little, maybe, even though you come in from a totally different.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, like reading the race description for next weekend, I've ridden my bike in and around where this race is, not my mountain bike, but my road bike. And there's a few places, of course, where the trail crosses the road. And so it's describing the course and it's naming all these places I've actually ridden my bike on the road.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And so it does feel kind of cool. And there are places I love to ride my bike, by the way. And so I'm actually excited to go next weekend up to this place where I've ridden my bike so many times and where I have so many positive memories of riding my bike to actually run in preparation for Comrades.
Can we dig into this vest? Like why we went with the vest and not maybe a double barrel version of what you have? I'm curious. I'm not accusing good question. You of making a bad choice.
Why didn't I get the double barrel of the orange mud bottle holder, right? I have the single bottle holder right now. Honestly, it's just because I wanted to try something new and because I know that ultimately this has more capacity than that does. Like at full capacity, this vest will have 5 liters, right? Whereas at full capacity, the orange mud sling will have 2.5. And so I think that that's part of it. The other thing is that
how are you going to get it to 5 liters? You're going to wear a hydration.
If I wanted to get it to the full thing, I'll actually put the hydration bladder in the back. Yeah.
Okay.
But that being said, really and truly, the main reason is that I wanted to jump on the vest bandwagon. I like my orange mud thing, and I'll probably still use it for most of my runs where I only need a single bottle, like at Kennesaw Mountain in the summer, because they have so many water fountains out there that I can stop frequently and actually refill it. But I feel like in the event, and maybe this is what you're getting at by asking me this question, in the event that things go well in Comrades, and in the event that I'm feeling healthy and strong afterwards, and in the event that I realize that, hey, maybe I can, in fact, live my dream of becoming an ultra runner after Comrades, then this actually is kind of a step in that direction, too. And so it's in part for the training for Comrades, but it's also in part for thinking beyond and crossing my fingers that maybe I have a ultra career beyond Comrades, but we'll see.
Let's be real, guys.
and I of course have the vest, and after getting the vest, I bought the double barrel bottle holder.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I did that was I will never carry 10 pounds of water,
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. none of the races I do require that.
Right.
So, you know, 5 liters of water is, I mean, you're up near, I think that's 10 pounds of water.
Yeah.
So I've never come into that situation where there weren't enough aid stations where I couldn't refill.
Yeah.
And refilling a soft flask is just a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is. Mm-hmm. So I find that the hard bottle solves that problem. Mm-hmm. What I was thinking you were going to say is you're going to carry more than just water. Mm-hmm. So if you're carrying a rain jacket, or you're carrying a, you know, a emergency blanket, or you're carrying mm-hmm. a blister kit, mm-hmm. okay, the vest then starts to fall apart because it just doesn't, I mean, it has space to carry stuff like that, but it doesn't really have
the orange mud quiver starts to fall apart.
The orange yeah. mud quiver. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Well, yeah. And I guess that's kind of what I'm saying too, is that the part of maybe me starting to toy with the idea of doing ultras beyond just doing comrades, that's kind of part of it, right? I guess as we're talking about it, the reason for me buying a vest is a little bit more complex than maybe I wanted to admit at first.
mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. No, I'm glad we're discussing it.
But I think it checks all of these boxes in the sense that I wanted to try something new, i.e. a vest. I did want more capacity because I got too dehydrated in terms of fuel and water and all that sort of thing on that run a week and a half ago. So I did want something with higher capacity. And then also just kind of thinking about what might be, right? Bringing a jacket along.
When Grace and I did the Black Hills 100, that was a essential item, mm-hmm. right? But mm-hmm. then doing... you know, running on Blue Ridge, like those 10-mile legs, you just mm-hmm. need two bottles mm-hmm. and you don't have to carry the rest of the stuff. So
right.
I'd say that both have their uses, but I'm never going to carry 10 pounds of water unless I absolutely have to. That's right. That's a lot.
Yeah, so. For sure. And that's actually the reason why I got this was Michelle's advice. This is Michelle's counsel. That's the reason why I got the one that has a 5-liter capacity rather than the one that has a 12-liter capacity, which
is the one that I have.
Yeah. There's exactly. no way that we I would ever have this talk. 12 liters. Yeah. I really truly would not ever buy 12 liters. But five, I can imagine
this scenario things other than water.
So yeah.
That's good. I told him when he registers for UTMB that we can go like 10 to 12 liters. But for right now, I thought 5 liters was a good start. And also showed him the HydroPack soft flasks that stand up that mm-hmm. are just much easier for people at aid stations to refill than the soft flasks that actually come with the vest.
I have no desire really to run UTMB. there is an iconic 100 miler that I do have a pipe dream of competing in one day, but it is not UTMB.
Hard Rock.
So it is not no. Hard Rock either. Oh my God. Like I said, I'm toying with things in my head. We'll see. I'm always toying with something in my head, but I'm still very much focused here on comrades too. Like I said, I'm thinking in practical terms about the temporary tattoos and everything
else. The
vest
is much more practical.
I think you actually engaged me
in a conversation about
fair
it.
Point,
so.
Fair point. Fair point.
For years, I feel like, George, you gave up on the ultra running long distance, and now you're like, oh, my body feels good. So maybe we can just add a few of these puzzle pieces so that if we can make it happen, kind of we have what we need to get going. I think it's awesome.
That is precisely what's going on. That is 100% what's going on.
Eric, it was like we were in REI for like an hour. I wasn't in there with him, but like the texting was like.
Well, this is also because George had some REI bucks and it was the member sale. So there's a lot going on here.
The member sale was going on yesterday. My wife's bike was there because my sons are riding their bikes a whole lot more now.
We can talk about bikes.
So we took her old hybrid bike in there to kind of get them to tune it up and make sure that the brakes still worked and the gears would still change and that sort of thing. And so they replaced the cables and housing and tuned the derailleurs and trued the wheels and all the other things that happens to a bike when you haven't ridden it in a long time. So the reason why I'm going to be able to go to North Carolina in 3 weeks is because my sons and my wife are going on spring break together. It's my son's spring break. And they're going to Joshua Tree and they're going to be doing a whole lot of cycling and stuff like that, as part of that trip.
That'll be epic.
Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be fantastic. They last year went to the Grand Canyon to Zion and really enjoyed it. And so they've kind of now fallen into this pattern of going to national parks. For spring break, at least for the next little while. So that's exciting. And I think that's a great, great thing for them to be doing. So
you mentioned REI, and it just reminds me of the fact that I also had a pretty good member credit.
Yeah, you did.
And I took advantage of the member sale yesterday, and I bought a pair of shoes that, although I'm going to pick them up today, I probably won't run in them for a week.
You bought a pair of Endorphin Speed 4s, didn't you?
Endorphin Speed 4s, the REI Saucony collab. Can you believe I bought a pair of collab shoes?
It is actually, I could not, when you sent that picture, I was, first of all, profusely jealous. Okay, yeah, fine, fair. But they're then cool, it's like, shoes. Oh my God, he totally fell for that. Like, he totally took the bait.
No,
they're hot,
the other,
man.
They literally look like they're on fire. I like them. I think they're cool.
They do. That fire color that you get when you do the little emoji on your phone is like exactly the colors of that shoe. But so it came down to this. I have not spent real money on a pair of shoes in a very long time, because my shoes keep getting, like, either I had a shoe blow out and it got replaced, or someone gave me a pair of shoes, or I don't know. I just, for some reason, I hadn't spent any real money on a pair of shoes. But I have dwindled my road shoes down to a single pair that I can run in right now. Hmm. It's the version 3 speeds, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, man, I got to get a new pair of shoes. Right as I said that, we got our REI dividend check. And I was like,
it's providence, man.
And, you know, we won't talk about the amount of that check, because it was sickening. But then Michelle, I think you pointed out the shoe. We were talking, and you pointed out the shoe.
It's
and
so
I
good.
Said, so I can get a pair of shoes without spending real money.
Real money.
If I buy them, if I buy them at REI, right?
Absolutely.
And the only other color choice for, because you can't get a lot of road shoes at REI, the only other color choice was like this purple Saucony Speed version 4. And I don't wear purple. So.
All right.
In general.
Very good.
So
I like them. I think they're cool, man. I look forward.
It's a cool looking shoe.
I look forward to seeing them on your feet in the Tobacco Road Relay in a month and a half. So
there's a good chance I'll wear them in one of those stages, because we're running 4 stages this year instead of 3, right?
Right.
I may wear those I think I'm running the last leg. At least that's what we discussed. So I may wear those into the finish.
Awesome. Perfect. That they will definitely enhance your finish line photos.
speaking of that, I was getting excited, and I started looking at the course, which is significantly different than when we ran the inaugural.
When we
race.
Won the inaugural.
We won. We will forever be the winners of the inaugural.
Absolutely.
Guys, Road Relay. Nobody cares.
Dude, two out of three people on this podcast care.
And there's
Why
at least two other people that care.
They needed to change the course. There were a few places where
so
I
people
think
didn't die.
Yeah, there was a few places where you like crossed
traffic
and some intersections that were rough and things like
that.
Yeah. Eric got lost on the course. Brett got lost on the course. I came as close as I've ever come to actually getting hit by a car on that course, without actually getting hit, of course. When a car almost took a left into me. I think they made a lot of changes, which are good. I'm excited to see the changes. But anyway, keep going, Eric.
Yeah, so I guess the what I was getting at was, what I'm doing right now, and anybody who follows me on Strava knows this, is a lot of recovery.
Right.
One of my first real trail run a week ago tomorrow, so last Sunday, and I was having so much fun. Michelle, you would be so proud of me. I and George, I believe. I was having so much fun that I said, you know what? I told George and Michelle that I was going to make my Strava posts more fun this year. So I'm going to add a video. And I actually stopped and I set up my camera and I ran like I was flying like an airplane, and I jumped over my camera. I was like, oh, this is so much fun. And that was only like 2 miles in. 2 miles later, I rolled my ankle, hopped. And then I had to sit down for like 4 or 5 minutes, wondering whether I was actually going to be able to get out of the woods, because I was literally 4 miles from my car. No matter what direction I went, I was 4 miles from my car.
Yeah.
And I was able to get up and walk a few steps, and then I kind of jogged a few steps. The real only thing I couldn't do was hyperextension of my ankle, or roll it at all. So I was able to slowly jog back to the truck, and then I decided I'm not going to get negative about this. I am simply going to chronicle my recovery. And that's what I've been doing.
Cool, man. Good.
And I was taking pictures. So for those of you who don't follow me on Strava, I was actually taking pictures of my ankle, which caused me to take pictures of my feet. And I started getting these negative comments from my followers about how nasty my feet were.
I can't imagine.
Somebody mentioned, I guess there's a website where you can take pictures of your feet and people will pay for them. I'm not up on that.
So
I'm not really up on that.
It's funny you mentioned that. So there's
oh, no.
one of the,
oh, no.
one of the reasons
like
why,
the directions is headed.
No, I'm not going to plug a website that has that. But one of the reasons why I like my coach is that she is a little bit experimental. And one of the things that she pointed me to was this app called Orientate Free. And Orientate Free is built on the idea, or it's built on some research in physical therapy circles that says that when you're experiencing pain, it's in part because your brain has lost its sense of which foot is which, or something like that. And so it's an app that you go through and look at pictures of feet and you say whether it's a left foot or a right foot. And it shows you all these feet in all these different directions. And you have to actually say, that's a left, that's a right, that's a left, that's a right, that's a left, that's a right. And it takes about 20 to 25 seconds. And you look at like 30 feet. And she said, initially, I had a hard time getting the app actually approved because, you know, it was considered to be not safe for work for people who have foot fetishes, evidently. But yeah, it was kind of weird. I used it every day for about a month.
I'm sorry.
To see what it was like.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Once again,
I mean,
I've learned two things about George today. This is fabulous.
No, I'm
this
telling you,
absolutely fabulous.
I am willing to try all sorts of various things here, but yeah, no, it says in the description, research shows the ability to identify left and right is slower and less accurate in people suffering from pain. And there's a direct link to the ability to correctly recognize left and right to the level of pain. Orientate Free has been developed to measure this ability and help retrain the brain.
Okay. I'm there. Orientate Free.
Give it a try, man. I don't know whether it actually helped. I do think that I'm experiencing less pain now than I was certainly prior to all the various things I've been doing with my coach over the course of the past several months. There's been a lot of strengthening and use of bands and calf raises and just everything, right? But yeah, maybe this was part of it too.
Now I do have to thank your coach and you, because mm-hmm. Up to this and through this, I've been doing a serious amount of calf raises. Mm-hmm. This is serious. You can take that look off your face. And I've been doing it. I've been doing weight bearing. And I did it. I've been doing it all flat surface up. Mm-hmm. I haven't been doing negatives because I felt like that might be overstressing my mm-hmm. Achilles.
Yeah.
And although
you only had me start doing negatives a month ago.
Right. And that's what I figured I would eventually work into that. Although the ankle is slowing me down for that run I did, which ended up being an 8-mile run last Sunday, my Achilles didn't bother me at all.
Hey.
And so I want to give you thanks and your coach for getting you on that bandwagon and reminding me that that is how you recover from these things. But it just takes a while.
Yeah, it does. It does. Very good.
What is a negative?
Good.
What does that
where,
mean?
Where you drop your heel below flat surface. So like if you're standing on a stair and you would drop off the edge of the curb or off the edge of the stair. Yeah.
So typically you do it flat surface for a while. You might even do it with a pair of shoes on that have a drop to them so that you're not even getting to flat. And
the
then
flat
you
foot.
Do... Right. And then you'll put like a small board under your toes and then you can eventually graduate to using a stair or something.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I want to mention, I want to give a shout out to everybody who tried to run the Peyton's 10 by 5K last weekend.
Oh my gosh.
The last time that we recorded, we of course talked about how all three of us had decided that based on the fact that Michelle was doing a marathon this weekend, the fact that Eric has a lot of stuff going on inside of his life that was preventing him from being able to go and be on a relay, the fact that I didn't think it was the right thing for my training in that moment to go run 10 5Ks on a flat grass loop.
Dodged.
Exactly. We talked about all of us decided not to do it. Well, there was so much rain in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, that literally the course was underwater. And even though they really, really wanted to try and make the race happen, they actually had to cancel it morning of. And so, yes, we did indeed actually truly dodge a bullet with that race. So
even on the driest year, there have always been puddles on that course because it's completely flat, right, and there's either a lake or a pond like right next to it. So there has always been water on the course.
Yeah. When you and I ran it 2 years ago, it rained in for the first two or three 5Ks, I remember. And then it got really cold, you recall. And so it was muddy most of the day, but the course was literally underwater. You would be running in a river just to run the course.
The videos were hilarious.
Yeah. So the race director really had no option but to cancel. And he did the right thing by canceling, even though I know it was hard for him. And most people on the Facebook page for the race have been very gracious and understanding, because how could you not be? Yeah, I did want to mention that for everybody. So, kind of dodged a bullet there.
Well, and if you were signed up and you showed up, and you know that we do like feel bad about that, but I think you can contact our friend Brett Wellborn, and he will tell you how little of a shit he gives because it was the right decision.
So that's right. Brett, who probably has a bigger stake in actually running than anybody, given the fact that he's actually run every single one of those races. He is one of only a couple of people who has run every lap of every 10K or every 5K for every time that race has actually taken place, for sure. And he's good friends with everybody in that community too. Let's talk about one other thing, quick thing with training, and then we do want to talk about a couple of recent events here. One other quick thing with training is to say that on Thursday night, I had already done a workout on Thursday morning, and so this wasn't my full run. I only took 15 minutes to do it, but on Thursday night, I actually went to the Wahoo headquarters here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I ran on the new Kicker treadmill. It was kind of cool. It was very different. Michelle, have you seen all the stuff about the Kicker treadmill? Eric, the tech guy, have you seen all the stuff about the Kicker treadmill? I know you don't like treadmills, Eric. That's the reason why I went to Michelle first.
I don't know anything about the Kicker treadmill. So why? Honestly, I don't know anything. Why would somebody want it? If you don't already have a Kicker, if you're not like a multi-sport athlete, if you don't use a Kicker to cross train or for cycling for your main, you know, why do you want the treadmill?
Okay, well, the first thing, it is a treadmill. So it has nothing to do with cycling. It is a straight up tool for runners, right? And so it's a straight treadmill. But the thing that makes it different is that it has this thing called run free mode. And so it has levers on it that you can use to speed up or to slow down or to increase the incline or decrease the incline. It goes up to 15% incline, has a top speed of 15 miles an hour.
Wow.
But you can increase and decrease those things using these little levers just like you can any other time. But then it also has a mode called run free mode. And so once you kind of get going, you hit the button called run free mode, and then you don't have to hit anything anymore. It has a motion.
Mean?
It has a motion sensor at the bottom of the console of the treadmill that measures how far you are away from the motion sensor. And if you get closer to it, the treadmill speeds up. And if you get farther away from it, the treadmill slows down. So effectively what it does is it keeps you in the center of the treadmill belt.
So, you see what I'm saying? If you're frantically trying to get to the front of the treadmill to reach the levers to slow down, it's going to keep speeding up.
Exactly.
And spit you off the
back.
Which
happened to me in the first 100 yards that I did it. Yeah.
Sounds like a tech nightmare.
So no, it's cool. But I think it's a brilliant idea. And we're definitely going to get somebody from Wahoo to come on and talk about it over the course of the next month or so here. And I'm excited about that. But it is a brilliant concept. It's a great, great concept because you just start running. And you know how when you go for a run outside, you're doing a so-called overground run. When you run uphill, you kind of slow down a little bit. When you go downhill, you speed up a little bit. It flattens up. You kind of find it. Like your pace is not constant when you're doing a run outside. Well, that's the thing about this is that your pace is also not constant. That right. Depending on if you start feeling good and kind of start naturally speeding up, then you'll naturally speed up. You'll get closer to the front of the treadmill, and the treadmill will speed up in order to kind of keep you where you are on the treadmill.
And I assume and it can go negative two. You said it has 15 degrees up. What can it go?
It goes to negative three. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So it doesn't have nearly as much down as it does up, but I mean, you know,
it's still pretty good.
So the fact that it has any negative at all is pretty good.
Right.
And then with that in mind too, the other thing that it does is they have entered a special partnership with Zwift where Zwift actually controls the ups and downs of the treadmill.
Oh, that's so cool.
And so in some ways it works the same way that a smart trainer, like a kicker, would work for a bike on Zwift. The treadmill works like that on the run. Right now, if I go for a run on Zwift using my treadmill, which I love, by the way, my Technogym MyRun treadmill, if I want to try and mimic what's going on Zwift, I have to actually use the buttons, right? And for the most part, I don't. Whereas I got into Titans Grove, which Eric, having ridden on Zwift before, can tell you it's almost constant up and down. And the treadmill the whole time is going up and down, up and down, up and down. And likewise, I'm speeding up when we start going downhill, and then I'm slowing way back down when it pitches up to 6%. Right. And then I'm speeding up when it goes down to negative 3%. And then so faster, slower, faster, slower, faster, slower. And it's keeping me in the middle of the treadmill and I'm hitting no buttons.
That's pretty cool.
It's
so Michelle, this is if you're a Zwifter and you're a bike rider on Zwift, but no, hear me out for just for a second. One thing that drives the bikers crazy is that you'll get passed by a runner on a climb because they're actually at zero elevation,
right.
Or sorry, zero, yeah, elevation right. On their
zero,
treadmill,
yeah. Right.
Running 6 minute miles, and you're grinding it out at
up 350, 400 grade.
Watts, yeah. 12% yeah. grade.
Right, because your bike adjusted for the grade.
Right.
Right, and theirs just looking at their pace, and
right.
So...
Right.
Okay, but
whereas if you're on a Wahoo treadmill, the Wahoo treadmill would pitch up to 12%,
yeah.
Forcing you to slow down, but you wouldn't have to hit the buttons to slow down real quick.
Okay. No,
you would just
cool.
Slow down and it would slow down on its own, the same way your bike
this
does.
This is very cool.
Is Wahoo marketing this to somebody like me who has no prior experience with Wahoo or a kicker or a bike? Like, how are they marketing this to just the treadmill purchasing community? Because you guys know, 100%. You understand the dynamics of how it works.
The Zwift thing is just icing. Just think of this, Michelle. So like when you get on a treadmill, you set it at, you know, however many minutes per mile and you just run, mm-hmm. right? But if you have a profile built into it, say your treadmill goes up 5 and down 2 or whatever, if you have a profile built into it, when it goes up 5, it still expects you to run that same pace,
right.
Which is unrealistic because now you're going to start working much harder. So this treadmill allows you to react
exactly.
More like a real run.
And, like you
and
would
it's
if
not
you were
changing
outside.
The pace.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not changing the pace. It's actually letting you determine what the pace is. So
right.
I think that's pretty cool.
It's super cool. It's super cool. The price tag looks
expensive.
Like it's going to be somewhere in the $5,000 range. They don't have them on the market yet. That's an expensive treadmill, but it's not an obscene treadmill.
It's not crazy.
Yeah, no, it's not crazy.
What's the surface like? What was it like to run on it?
So
you've been on a lot of treadmills.
As far as like the actual treadmill on the ground, like the feel underfoot, it felt standard, for lack of a better way of saying it. So the feel of my feet under me did not feel any different from running on a treadmill at the gym.
What were you wearing?
So I was wearing Puma Deviate Nitros, baby.
I'm glad you went to the shoes and you didn't tell me like what kind of underwear you were wearing or something like this.
I was wearing my
no, we don't actually need to know, George.
Shorts and my finisher, my Berlin Marathon finisher shirt.
I was wearing my sunglasses so that I didn't have to interact
and that's
with anybody
all.
Who was around
I
the treadmill.
I didn't want anything to interfere with my treadmill experience, and so I went completely naked. No, I'm kidding.
Great.
Erase, Michelle, we're getting your mind off your marathon tomorrow.
The visual that nobody needed. Thank you.
delete.
But no. So as far as like the stiffness of the board, if you will, or how hard it was underfoot, it felt very standard in that regard, right? Okay. And so I didn't feel like there was a lot of give there necessarily. If I learned how to run on it better, I probably would have paid more attention to that. I've said before on this podcast, two things I've said before, and to harken back to both of them. One, I've said before on this podcast that running on a treadmill, particularly running fast on a treadmill, is a skill. Like, you have to learn how to do that. You have to actually learn how to not worry about falling off the back of the treadmill and keep up with the treadmill as it's speeding up and things like that. Like, you have to actually learn how to do that. That's an actual skill.
I think you have to learn your footfalls are different on a treadmill too.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like you're slamming your feet through the bottom of the treadmill until you start to think about it.
So you have to effectively learn how to run on a treadmill. And I know how to run on a treadmill. I've raced on a treadmill. I've trained plenty on a treadmill. Like that's a skill I've developed. This is a third way. So I have outdoor running skills. I have regular treadmill running skills. This would be a particular set of skills I would need to develop to be able to run on this specific treadmill. And the reason why harkens back to the other thing that I've talked about before on this podcast. And so if I'm doing a workout on the treadmill, right, at elemental altitude or at my house or wherever it happens to be, where they're just using standard traditional treadmills, I would say, all right, I'm going to run this next 3 minutes at 10 miles an hour or whatever it is. And I would set it at 10 miles an hour, and then it would speed up to that. And I would essentially kind of have to keep up with the treadmill, right? And that's the way I always picture it in my head. That's the way I say it in my head. I have to keep up with the treadmill.
Right.
And I don't really have to pay attention to precisely how fast I'm running. I only need to keep up with the treadmill.
This
treadmill, if it's like, okay, you need to run the next 3 minutes at 10 miles an hour, you just speed up to 10 miles an hour, right? You just kind of gradually speed up to the pace at which you need to be running. And that's a weird thing to do, to actually try and get up to that speed and hold that speed and not go over that speed. Because that's something you do as well. Literally when I first stepped onto it, I started running in the run free mode, and I heard and could feel the treadmill speeding up. And so in my head, when a treadmill speeds up, I'm accustomed, then I speed up.
Speeding up.
Right. Cause I'm trying to catch
you're
up.
You're reacting to it, reacting
exactly.
to you.
And instead on this treadmill, you, the runner, have agency. You're the one who's in control. And so I sped up and the treadmill reacted to me, which meant it sped up further, which meant that I sped up further. And at that point I'm like, okay, I'm running 5:12 pace. That's not what I had in mind. Right.
Yeah.
And I have to kind of hop up and stick my head on my feet on the runners and kind of let it slow back down. Right. You have to learn how to do that. And then I got better at it. I ran on only for about 15 minutes, but I got better at it kind of gradually speeding up and gradually slowing down the way that you really have to in order to be able to effectively use it. But still, I was kind of shocked at how variable the pace was. Like how, and again, it was, I was running in Titan Grove on Zwift. And so there's lots of ups, downs, ups, downs. I was kind of shocked at how variable my pace was. And I think that didn't have to do with the sensitivity of the machine. It had to do with the fact that, like, my pace was very variable. I'm not accustomed to having to pay such close attention to going at a precise speed on the treadmill. I'm accustomed to just kind of tuning out and running at the speed the treadmill is going. Does that make sense?
I think you did too much at once with this.
Maybe.
Like, if you had just got on the treadmill and been able to just run, like in normal mode, okay, I can assess that. And then if you would have added in the automated up and down, not on Titan's Grove, yeah. then you might have been able to get used to that. And he was like, oh, okay, let's add in the run free mode, kind of like stepped into it. Because it's sort of like you went from riding your bike outside to jumping on a, you know, the kicker bike with the elevation on Titans Grove. Right? You know, it's like that seems kind of an extreme, like there's a lot to get used to.
Yeah, no, you're totally right about that. And the reason for that, of course, is the fact that I was testing out this piece of equipment for the first time, right? I wanted to get a full sense of what the features were, right? Definitely, well, if I had more time or something like that, I would definitely.
Here's my recommendation. If you ever step into something like this, then come in with a better plan.
Maybe don't allot 15 minutes, maybe allot a full hour. Maybe don't do a run earlier in the day. Perhaps that's a better plan. I agree. I will say it does require you to use Zwift or a watch or some other thing. On the console of the treadmill, it has speed and it has incline, and that's it. It doesn't keep the time. So they don't actually put time on it. And so you can connect it to one of their proprietary software, Wahoo. You know, they bought Sufferfest and they have other things on there. Or you can connect it to your watch, or you could connect it to Zwift. And that's how you actually control it and how you actually use it.
And it's Bluetooth or
so yeah, it's both
connection it's both. To okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you had a bunch of these in a room, could you do like a group workout and everybody's essentially doing the same thing and you've got the same stats and you can.
For sure. Or you could go for a group run and you could all be running in different places with different elevations and all sorts of other things. And everybody's kind of doing their own thing.
Oh, so you could do Zwift for running.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yay.
Exactly. Exactly. It was very cool. Like I said, we'll get somebody from Wahoo on here over the course of the next month or so, and we'll talk a little bit more about it and what the vision is. But I don't like the term game changing. I don't like the term epic or crushed, as you all know. Like, and I don't want to say that this is a game changer. I just think it's an overused term. But I do think that if they can get this technology right, and people latch onto it, it could potentially make a big splash inside of the treadmill world. It's a radically different approach to how you control a treadmill. And like I said, your relationship as the runner to the treadmill is completely flipped.
Right. It is what Zwift was built for.
Yeah.
So like the interface already exists.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us who ride Zwift but don't run on Zwift, if we're looking at a treadmill, this is what we're looking for.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's cool. It's neat.
There is a bay in my garage that is open for a treadmill. Yeah.
There is space. All right. Two big events lately that we want to talk about. Of course, we'll just real quickly mention the NCAA indoor championships. If you didn't watch them, go watch them. Parker Volbe won both the 5,000 meters and the 3,000 meters. She's kind of stunning. Nico Young had never won an individual title in the NCAA, even though he's finished on the podium countless times. And he won both the 5,000 and 3,000 meters, which I, for one, was very psyched to see. Maya Ramsden won the mile. Luke Hauser from the University of Washington won the mile. Go check out all that stuff. The main event that we want to talk about, though, was what we referred to the last time we got together that had just begun once we last got together, and that was Lululemon's Further event. We know a whole lot more about it now. 6 days long, lots of different people taking part. You had Camille Heron, world record holder, at lots of different things and set lots of world records here. Devin Yanko, also a professional ultra runner from Howard, Colorado. Stephanie Flippin, a doctor and running coach from Colorado as well. Leah Yingling, a biomechanical engineer from Salt Lake City. Kayla Jeter, a former volleyball player and strength and fitness coach in Chicago. Mirna Valerio, who's an author, adventurer, and a mother from Winooski, Vermont. A Chinese marathoner named Xiaoming Jia, who's 38 years old. A black belt named Yu Young Kang from South Korea. She was 44 years old. A Brazilian jiu-jitsu athlete from Hong Kong. if you can follow that, named Vriquo Kwok, 32-year-old who only started running last year, as a matter of fact. And then a strength and conditioning coach from Melbourne, a 27-year-old named Montana Farah Seaton. So 10 women of very diverse profiles all went out there. And Michelle, what'd you think?
It was certainly entertaining. I mean, it held my, piqued my interest for, you know, 6 days straight, 24 hours.
You were into it, man.
I thought I would be into it. I was so into it. I think, you know, as the embargo was lifted and we got to see more and more details, it just felt like if you like this type of stuff, from, you know, the shoes to the gear to the cooling strategies to the tech to the, you know, crews on site, Coros people in charge of making sure people's watches don't mess up. I mean, there was so much to kind of geek out about. Mm-hmm. It definitely, you know, it does seem like a new kind of a spin on the traditional, let's say, 6 day, you know, ultra running, like 6 days in the dome or whatever. I think mm-hmm. obviously the main point of this, which was not achieved, even though there were multiple goals and multiple records broken, was that Camille was, you know, hoping to go further in that 6 day time than anybody had previously gone before, male or female. But it was, you know, it is pretty crazy to watch Camille just dig in day after day, hour after hour.
The women's 48 hours, the women's 300 mile, the women's 500K, the women's 72 hour, the women's 600K, the women's 400 mile, the women's 96 hour, the 700K, women's 500 mile, women's 120 hour, women's 900K, and the women's 6 day, i.e. 144 world record. 560.33 miles that she ran over the course of those 6 days. Pretty incredible.
This was the Camille Heron party and everybody else was invited.
So the all the others except for I think one ran the farthest they had ever ran in 6 days, going from Yingling, who did 400 miles over the course of that time, to Vriquo Kwok, who I mentioned a second ago, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu athlete from Hong Kong who just started running last year. She did her first 5K literally last year, and she did 188.47 miles over the course of 6 days, which is more than I've ever run in 6 days. So yeah, I mean, she went out and ran a 50K every day for 6 days for nearly a full week. So yeah, super impressive job on everybody's part there.
One thing I will just say from the get-go, I would say Lululemon they didn't miss anything, right? People are like, mm-hmm. oh, they totally missed the boat on women over 50 or women who are perimenopause or women who are postmenopause. It's like, no. Like every single detail of this, they nailed, because the company in and of itself, like they defined the mission for themselves and for what they wanted in this. And I promise you, like they dotted every I and crossed every T and checked every single box.
Lululemon really kind of sold it as, you know, we're making this event to celebrate inclusiveness, to celebrate women, to try and, of course, break some of the men's records, but then also to create a lot of scientific understanding. And the director of performance and solutions and applied sports research, a guy named Trent Stellingworth, said, quote, "This is the most audacious in-race research project ever. 6 days, 144 hours straight, continuous monitoring with continuous glucose monitoring, doubly labeled water for energy expenditure, core temperature pills, energy intake, top to bottom, we're trying to measure everything possible without disrupting the race. We'll have hundreds of thousands of data points throughout the entire 6 days to analyze. We plan to publish initial findings and case studies starting in the fall, and we know that will continue for a very long time. We really see this as a catalyst in the academic community pushing our scientific understanding," unquote. What do you think?
Let's see the data, right? So like, what are we going to get first? I mean, the core temperature pills. I mean, some of the stuff they did is pretty crazy, but you can have any data that you want here. Like, what do you think? Mm-hmm. I don't have any idea what they're going to publish first, what we might never see. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
And I think it's interesting too, they'll have a pretty wide range of data in terms of like, if you only took data on Camille Heron, you would have data about a certain type of runner with a certain background. You'd have data on a Camille Heron type runner, but they are going to have data on a wide variety of different types of runners, of female runners. And I think that's fascinating and interesting and potentially really worthwhile. I still can't quite get to a place where I can say that that was their entire rationale. And I don't know why I really feel like I have to say their main rationale was something different from their secondary rationale, or that you can only have one rationale. I don't know why I think that you only can have a scientific rationale or a marketing rationale. Why can't you have both? But I just still can't quite get to a place where I think that it was purely an scientific endeavor.
I don't think it was purely any one thing, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think it was marketing. It was apparel manufacturing. I think they care much more about the shoe than they do about mm-hmm. the clothing. Mm-hmm. Everybody had, I think, 36 different pieces to choose from, and they were custom mm-hmm. fit to each athlete.
They had a tailor on site who was repairing yeah. things that needed to be repaired if they weren't quite right, or altering them as they needed to be altered. Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the main criticisms that we've seen once we found out that each person has, you know, multiple pieces of custom gear, and that they've created all of this apparel for, you know, to ease the cooling efficiency of getting ice close to the skin. We have hats that have big brims, you know, like a bucket hat to keep the sun off the athletes' faces, that have pouches for the ice. You've got like one piece.
There's pouches for the ice inside the bucket hats?
In the bucket hat, in the shirts. Yeah, they also have like shrugs so that you can cover just the neck and the arms. So essentially they're wearing like a long sleeve shrug and then just a sports bra or tank top underneath it, which instead of having like a full layer of sun protection, which is just brilliant. And just a lot of the stuff in terms of what they would layer on when it got cold at night. They had the first, you know, the first day or so, like it rained at night. So just to be able to layer up and tear things away. So all of this innovation that they brought to the apparel, what's been said, what's been put out by Lululemon and by like the journalists who covered it, is that none of the apparel is coming to market. Like it was just designed specifically for these athletes and for this event. But the shoes, which, you know, obviously a lot of their testing revolved around, and the whole point was to get these women each in these same shoes, like these trail shoes, running shoes, they are coming to market. So I feel like, I hope that's wrong, that none of the apparel is coming to market. I mean, listen, by the end of the first 12 hours, I had like 10 items on a wish list. Like, you know, I want, like, I'll take these shorts.
That you see them wearing, you mean?
Oh, yeah, I would buy that. I would totally, yeah, it'd be a nightmare for me if I walked into a store and got to choose between all of their options. Now, I didn't like the color palette that they went with. They had their reasons. We can talk about that. We don't have to. But it's
the color was, it was coral and something
dune,
else.
Sand, like, just to, you know, be like, they wanted this desert vibe, basically. Okay. So I would buy multiple pieces of what these athletes were wearing. I'm probably never going to even try on the shoe. So just like, right. Mm-hmm. So I think, but I might not be their target audience.
I think you are. And I think that's part of the reason why they had such a wide range of people is that ultimately they could create a wide range of apparel, or at least a apparel line that worked for a wide range of people. See, I think that ultimately, whatever information they gathered, they're going to use that to create clothing that they will sell to you. Yeah, to make money. Yeah, to
and
sell
they
to
should.
You.
Why not?
Yeah. I agree with you. I think that they should. Not just because they should make money off of it, but because if you have clothing that was tested in this 6-day forge, then by all means, like, use that understanding that you have about that clothing to inform your clothing creation in the future. I would definitely be much more confident wearing a piece of clothing that I know has been tested over the course of a 6-day race
totally,
for a marathon
right.
or for an ultra or something like that, right?
Yeah. And also, like, a lot of it like look good, feel good. This stuff, I mean, not the colors necessarily, but it looked good. Like, these women looked good. I think that Montana is like my new girl crush. She looked really good.
So on the shoes, I find it hard to believe that Camille Herron actually ran in a standard Lululemon shoe. First run, no plate.
Have you heard anything about that? Because I that's an excellent point, and I agree with you.
It might have looked like the Lululemon shoe. It must have looked like the Lululemon shoe, because the articles I've read and everything said they all had to wear
Right.
Either the road shoe, the trail shoe, or a special shoe that is not going to be available to the public, which is probably some other manufacturer's shoe with their colors on it. That's
Michelle, Michelle, have you read anything about that?
I mean, Camille was very specific that she rotated through four pair of the same exact shoe. She, as her feet swelled, she tried a few laps a few times with half a size larger. It didn't work. So you can see in some of her pictures, like the shoes are ripped. So people were like, oh, look, the trashy shoe's already ripped. And, you know, she's been very like communicating very clearly and answering comments. And she said, no, well, my foot, you know, was getting wider and swelling. So we just cut all the stitching out. So mm-hmm. I very much think that it's a Lululemon shoe. I don't think they took you know, I think a lot of times Camille is the worst at this. She posts pictures and she puts tacos over her feet and you never know, like, oh, is she just trucking away in her Hokas and doesn't want to give Hoka, you know, any credit. Right. And also like Lululemon has brought a few shoes to the market. So they don't have a track spike, but when their track athletes are just on long, easy runs, if there's photographs, you know, they want them in the Lululemon shoe. So I don't think that this was everybody in a shoe for their own and Lululemon just covered it up. Like, I don't think they could get away with that. I think they are totally responsible and able, and they did control the narrative every which way, but I don't think they would, you know, have people wearing like an imposter shoe, so to speak. So.
And that speaks highly of the shoe. I mean, you know, that shoe now has all of those records I listed off a little while ago, you know, that's impressive. Even if you're rotating through four pairs of the shoes, even if you're having to cut out the stitching because your feet are swelling up so much because you're running hundreds upon hundreds of miles over the course of 6 days, that's still an impressive performance by those shoes, you know?
It's pretty crazy.
For sure. Well, I look forward to, and I hope that over the course of the next several months or even over the course of the next few years, we'll be able to say that, hey, Lululemon has this new line of clothing out that is based on the 6 day, the further line, if you will, or something like that, that's based on all the information that they gleaned from this event they had back in March of 2024. I mean, I certainly hope that they do that.
I think it's important. If you look at Camille's most recent posts, I mean, let's not like undermine the severity of, you know, the after effects of this race, even with all the best medical teams in the world. You know, she said, I don't feel well right now. World records always break me in every way. 6 days was an extreme overload that went beyond typical muscle brain fatigue pain. I was losing any control I had of my organs. The medical team was doing tests and helping me keep it together. My bladder urinary tract went first. They put me on an antibiotic that for like a urinary tract infection.
They put her on an antibiotic for a UTI during the race.
During the race. She said it helped a little, but I had to normalize incontinence. Then my bowels lost control the last 2 days. It felt like bumper cars inside with my bowels and spasms from the jostling of running. My lips, tongue, mouth hurt from consuming massive quantities of food and beverages. There's things that happened out there I can't talk about. Somehow I found a way to stay positive, happy, and to keep going. It was worth the pain and suffering. So I feel like maybe, like, we don't just quickly normalize these 6 day feats. Like, if if that is if that's the aftermath of something that was so heavily controlled, where obviously she had all the best in terms of like support, nutrition, medical care. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Like,
that's a lot.
Yeah.
No, and I'm glad you mentioned that too. It's easy to fall into thinking that Camille Herron is superhuman, and she is. But she also she has superhuman ability to suffer. And so, kudos to her for all that she accomplished, for sure. For sure. Last words on the Lululemon event here. Eric?
No, nothing to add. Michelle really summed it up right there at the end.
Right?
I mean, I'm not looking forward to ever doing a 6 hour or 6 day event. Six hours seems like a lot right now. I don't.
Yeah. 6 hours is plenty. Michelle.
My lingering is, I feel like it's not, is she going to try again? It's just like when and where. So I don't know. I think she will run herself pretty close to literally dying to try to break these 6 day records to prove that the farther women go, like, they can go further and be better than men. We have not seen the last of her 6 day attempt.
Very good.
And I will just say, so Leia's running Western States. So it'll be really interesting to see how this, you know, 400 miles in 6 days, what mm-hmm. that does for her in terms of how she fares in the summer a few months from now. It'll be really interesting to see. We'll see.
We'll see if this does it. Very good. Eric, thanks for being with us, man.
Hey, always fun. Thanks for having me. It's good seeing both of you.
Michelle, as always, thanks for being with us and good luck tomorrow.
Thanks. At least I have my my REI dividend left to look forward to. So. if it doesn't go well tomorrow, I'm going to go to REI and spend
either
some
way.
Money.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, right, even if it does go well,
have something to look forward to.
Yeah. A consolation
we'll
prize.
We'll say, if I do well, I'm not going to go spend my money.
Oh, I'm totally going to spend money and more probably now. All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks again for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast. Don't forget to check out our new website that we're building in early 2024, mostpleasantexhaustion.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pleasantpodcast or on Instagram at mostpleasantexhaustion. We're available on SoundCloud, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tell your friends and don't forget to give us a rating. We also offer coaching services through MPE Coaching. You can reach out to us at pleasantpodcast@gmail.com, at mpecoach@gmail.com, or just click on the coaching link on the podcast website. Again, that's www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. Thanks again to our sponsor, Blue Pineapple Travel. You can find them at bluepineappletravel.com, at facebook.com/bluepineappletravel, or on Instagram at bluepineappletravel. Check out High Echelon PC at highecheloncpa.com. Big thanks to our sponsor, Elemental Altitude. You can find them at elementalaltitude.com, on Instagram at elementalaltitude, or on Facebook at facebook.com/elementalaltitude. And finally, thanks to our newest sponsor, Bright Hair. You can find them at brighthair.com or on Instagram at bright.hair. On behalf of Michelle Frank and Eric Hall, thanks for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast.